Cape Talk. Food.
Now, with me in studio today is a real rising star of our local culinary scene. Only 21 years old, but she's already made it through to the next round of a very competitive international cooking competition. And delighted to have with us in studio Chef Logan Leiser, who hails from Gordon's Bay and these days is based in Somerset West, as well as her mentor, who I'll introduce in just a minute. But first, Logan, great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Were you able to get through okay with all that traffic that's just been described?
No, it was a breeze.
Okay, good. Yeah. Before I introduce your mentor, tell us a little bit about your story. When did you actually first start cooking and who were the big influences on you?
I would say my biggest influence was my mother, obviously, home cooking with her in the kitchen. Yes, and then I kind of just developed that after I went studying hospitality and culinary arts. And okay. I figured out I like culinary arts a little bit more, so I went further with that.
Okay, I believe you were toying between working as up in the skies or in the kitchen, but the kitchen won in the end.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What is it that you love so about the kitchen environment?
I would say it's a little bit of that that rush that the children get, you know. I used to play netball in school a lot, and that type of team sports was what I really, really love. So I feel like being in a kitchen doing service, that rush, that's kind of the similar feeling, and I really like that.
Okay, because it's not an easy lifestyle by any means, but you obviously thrive on the pressure. I know you did your studies at the private hotel school in Stellenbosch. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about them and what they offer?
It's an amazing little school. They only take about 60 people and about 3 semesters. So in the beginning, everyone does the same thing. You start off with hospitality and a little bit of culinary. So they teach you basics of hospitality, basics of culinary, and then your second year you get to specialize. So you can either go hospitality, or you can go culinary, or you can even go events and education. So it's pretty interesting. And it's a small team. The lecturers are very intimate with the kids and the rooms and the lectures are all very intimate, like interaction a lot. You get to talk. It's a person to person, not necessarily lecturer to student. So that's how we can connect and learn a bit more.
Now, that obviously opened doors for you in terms of your practical training, because you can be taught in a classroom and you can learn it in a sort of a classroom kitchen setting. But as you say, the environment in an actual restaurant kitchen is very, very different. The pressure is different. The heat literally is different. Part of your studies was in-service training at various organizations. And I know you had an opportunity to work with Bertus Besson at Overture. You were at Verhulst Estate. What struck you when you first did your practice teaching elements about how different it was to actually be out there in a restaurant environment?
It was very different. You know, they try and prep you for it before you go to the do your internships or your work-based learnings and so on. I would say it's very tough, you know, that the chefs, the executive chefs, the head chefs, they're all quite tough people to be with. But I think it's an amazing learning curve for you to see if this is what you want to do, being in those little small 6 months or 2 weeks that you are in a restaurant. You get to learn if this is what you want to do for the rest of your life. So it's very educational as well for me.
She says the executive chefs are really tough people, and she says it with a sideways glance at the man sitting next to her, who looks like he wouldn't harm a fly. But let me welcome executive chef Michael Degg of Restaurant Cavalli, which is where Logan is currently working, and it was an internship that led to her working there full time. I mean, Michael, what's it like for you as somebody who must be passionate about attention to detail and producing the finest dining experience when you take on somebody who is completely, I won't say unskilled and untrained, but is wet behind the ears, to say the least? It's obviously important to make the space to train new talent, but how difficult is it for you to bring somebody like that into a highly skilled professional kitchen?
Look, we actually had this discussion just outside. It's actually quite challenging, you know, but chefs also have the stigma of being aggressive and bad moods the whole time. And, you know, I love having students in my particular kitchen, and it's something that I really, really enjoy teaching. So it's something that I've tried to to really come open arms and try to learn more about it as well. So I try to take each student at a time rather than treating them all the same, treat them on an individual basis. And that works out much better. So some students you can push harder than others, and some you need to almost hold their hand. So it's about reading the individual rather than going, right, this is, you're in my kitchen now and these are the rules. So mm-hmm. that's the way. And then actually you get more out of the students that way. Mm-hmm. So you actually can push them a bit further, or you can go a bit slower. And some, you know, we work long hours in the kitchen and some of the students just can't do it. So you'd be like, okay, right, you don't have to work a double shift. You can work a bit easier and until you almost get your training wheels off.
Yeah.
So it takes about 3-4 months until you can actually really, really know where the student stands in the kitchen. It takes a long time. Yeah,
okay.
It's not just a come in. A lot of chefs get this wrong, where they just come in and they just treat all the students exactly the same, and then they get a lot of dropouts that way. And that's not what I want to see. I would like to see them grow, even if some of them are a lot slower paced at growing. But, yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, that's what's in the long term best interest of your industry.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that these people are given the opportunity to shine.
Exactly. Yeah. So many chefs drop out, especially at the first or second year, or even in college. There's a huge dropout rate of chefs, and it's partly because that they aren't prepared for it, and that the executive chefs where they're working, or the senior sous chefs, or the senior chefs, are too hard on them, and it's a stigma that needs to be broken, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now Logan started with you on an internship level. She's now working for you full time.
Yes.
And working her way up the ranks at the restaurant. What is it that you saw in her? I mean, give us an example of what you're looking for, because clearly you saw something special.
Yeah, it's about, obviously you have to come with the right attitude. That's mm-hmm. if you come out with the right attitude, it's better than any skill you can have. You know, you just, if you pitch up early, come with the right attitude, be prepared to work. And those are the kind of, you know, you're always going the extra mile, you know, saying, say, I'll stay and work on tonight, even though you're on an AM shift or whatnot.
Yeah.
Or let me do that. Or chef, can I do this? Or can I do this? It's about pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. Another one I always try to teach the students is you're not going to grow if you're just doing the bare minimum. You have to push yourself out the comfort zone, you know, and that's what obviously Logan has done. And she's gone off and done this competition, and it's absolutely amazing. Well, it's for the estate and myself as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So just to for the sake of the listeners, as you don't know the background, the competition that Logan's competing is the San Pellegrino Young Chef 2020 edition. It's a competition that spans several months, and she's made it through the first round of judging into the next. The field's been narrowed down to, I think, 135, and there's 7 South Africans, Logan, of which
yes.
you won. Now, this is all about presenting your signature dish to the judges, and I love the story about how your signature dish came into being. Before you tell us what it is, tell us what inspired the dish and how you came to create it.
I was quite nervous about this because the chef for the first time told me, I used to do little amuse bouches that I can design for myself, so something small that changes every day. And then chefs told me for the first time that I need to start making a starter. Mm-hmm. That's going to go on the menu. So obviously I'm nervous because I'm still young and new to this. So I had to make something that's really, really good. And some place where I usually sit and think is in a small little beach called Bikini Beach in Gwynedd Bay.
Mm.
And they have little puddles and rocks where the waves just crash onto it. And that's usually where I just zone out. So I was just staring into that, and then I realized that's actually a good beginning, because I would see like the water passing through with the little rocks and the small fishes swimming around, and the little, just a little pool of life that like almost no one sees. And I thought that's quite amazing. It's similar to Gordon's Bay. It's a little humble town mm-hmm. with so much to give and so much to provide, but not a lot of people get to experience it. And that's where I kind of got the inspiration from. So I started off by trying to get that concept onto a plate. So I spoke to Chef about the whole concept and the idea that I have, and he said, well, just go for a fish dish. And I was thinking, okay, yes, ceviche, and I wanted to have a sphere in it, and I want it to look like coral and stuff like that. This similar things that I saw on when I was sitting there. And at the end, at the final dish that we worked on for weeks and weeks, we finally got the thing that I wanted to be on the plate. So... yeah, it was.
Okay, so the thing on the plate, I believe it's sea bass at the heart of it.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about the elements you added there.
So it's it's a sea bass ceviche. We have a little bit of nectarines and some sesame oil and a lot of mixtures and nice stuff into that ceviche. With that, we have some watermelon. I compressed the watermelon in squid ink, so it's black.
Wow.
So it's something different. I also make, I take some fish that I cook, and then I flake it, compress it and fry it, and then it's kind of looks like coral because it fries, it gets all crispy, and there's like little holes through it. So I thought that was quite cool. And I also make a wonton sphere out of wonton sheets that I deep fry, and it becomes a nice sphere, and it kind of looks like a rock for me. So I also dust that with a nori and kale dust, so it's green, so it kind of looks like moss on a rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, and inside of that bowl is the ceviche, and then the things around it. I have a little bit of samphire, some oyster leaf with that, so it looks kind of looks like the puddle that I was looking at in Gordon's Bay.
I mean, it sounds unbelievable. Michael, I mean, she's just described a dish with I don't know how many elements. You probably can tell me it's 16, 17. Yeah. I think I lost count. I mean, preparing a dish of that level of intricacy and detail.
Yeah.
I was at a restaurant on Friday night where I was having that kind of cooking, and I looked at it and I thought, how do you time pulling something like that together?
It takes 7 minutes to plate that dish. That dish, we actually timed it. It took a chef 7 minutes.
And to plate
that dish. And the one time we had that on during season time, which is our December, January, February.
Yeah,
and the one day on early December, we sold 55.
Yeah,
in one day.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
That's a lot of time. Yeah. One dish. I mean,
but that's how popular this dish was. It's obviously a summery dish. It's not on the menu anymore. But we'll definitely do a version 2.0 with it coming up into the new summer season.
Yeah, maybe.
But so that was one of our most popular dishes. I mean, we got a lot of publicity on social media and all of that. So it was superb.
I mean, when it comes to fine dining at that level, how much is about the presentation and how much is about the flavor? Because you really can't have one without the other at that level of dining, can you?
Yeah, no. You eat with your eyes first, and you're smelling all the time as well, and then the flavor. But it's got to taste, you know, for me, it's got to taste as good as it looks. You know, if it's not tasting as good as it looks, you've kind of lost the essence of cooking.
Yeah, I also kind of believe that you can always take tasty food and make it look good. So it's kind of always going to be the flavors, you know.
It's got to be flavor first, yeah.
So when you cook at home, both of you, I mean, do you find yourself chefing up the mac and cheese or the beans on toast, or do you even cook for yourselves at home when you get home at the end of the shift? It's probably the last thing you feel like doing.
Exactly.
I'm cooking my days off, but I wouldn't cook after a long shift, no ways.
No.
You're so tired. Yeah. And like a bowl of cereal would suffice. But on the days home, but I wouldn't get chefy, just a simple, hearty, you know, definitely, just something that tastes great. You know, I would never get chefy on a. I used to when I was younger, trying to impress girls, but then.
But now I'm he's honest.
But now I'm over that stage, and I just want something tasty and like hearty.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, what is that dish, particularly in the middle of winter? If you've got a day off, you just want a comforting dish to eat in front of the tennis or speak to your weekend. What would you prepare, Michael? You first.
Got to be oxtail, slow braised oxtail in red wine, served with some creamy mash. I mean, can't go wrong with that.
Sounds
I mean,
it's
some bacon lardons in there maybe. So, you know, that's my type of comfort home eating.
Yeah.
It's like slow cooked, braised lamb shanks, curries. You know, I love slow cooking.
Yeah. You
know,
how about you, Logan?
I think I might have a slight obsession with spaghetti. I love spaghetti. I'll make spaghetti every day if I can.
Okay. Right, so somebody asking a little bit more about Cavalli itself. I've never had the pleasure of dining there, Michael. It's a fine dining restaurant, I know that much, an award-winning one at that. Tell us a little bit more about your sort of ethos.
Okay, so we're very much about sustainability and farm to table. I know that's a very used word these days, but we actually do grow our own vegetables on the estates.
Okay.
All our own salads, all our own herbs. You know, we got a lovely heirloom vegetable garden that we're using. We focus that as our focus point on our menu. So like when something comes into season, a vegetable, that will be our hero, even before so a meat or a fish. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I like to focus on my food rather than the other way around. So we're very vegetable based, and we're very vegetarian and vegan friendly. We always have a vegetarian full set tasty menu, and we always do a vegan starters, mains and desserts, and we can even turn that into tasty menus. So so we're very open friendly to dietaries and stuff like that. As a way with what the world is going, you have to be open. I mean, a lot of chefs nowadays are still a bit against vegans, but I always challenge my younger chefs to come up with great vegan ideas. I mean, you can get so creative out of it, like making tofu bacon and making vegan yogurt and stuff like that. I mean, you really have to think out the box, and that's what we've been doing lately, is trying to think out the box.
Okay.
Yeah.
How strictly or not do you follow food trends? I mean, is that something you look every and you go, well, I mean, I know the rise of the vegan is a food trend at the moment, but, you know, we've had the I don't know, now the exact ingredients escape me, but there are sort of noticeable trends in dining, whether it's the cocktail that everybody's drinking that summer or the particular protein that's on the plate. Is it something you're mindful of or that you deliberately stay away from? No, you are.
Food trends and food fashion is extremely, even to the point of what plate you're plating on.
Okay.
I mean, it's extremely trendy, and the fashion's trending all the time. I mean, Instagram and eating out are the two best platforms for doing that. Eating out at other people's great restaurants, and Instagram has played a huge. You know, when I first started cooking, obviously there was no Instagram, so reading cookbooks was time, but cookbooks got out of date very quickly. Well, Instagram, you can see the chef's food, what he's doing today, what he was cooking for lunch yesterday, which is a fantastic way of keeping up with food trends, I believe. Yeah, and what ingredients are coming into be trendy, you know, like foraged herbs, you know, stuff like that was trendy a couple, you know, it's always going to be trendy, but it's like, that's what's kind of always trying to push the boat out and to learn more what other great top chefs are doing.
And I mean, look what it's done for Kobus van Merwe at Wolfgang.
Yes. Exactly,
also won international recognition for what he's doing with that. So what's the next big thing then? What's the trend for spring?
Ooh. we spoke about foraging. That is always going to be a big one. You know, sustainability is very, very important for restaurants at the minute. And to use, and I think this is where food's going even more. And you saw the Test Kitchen doing the drought menu a few menus back ago. But I think that's, you know, being mindful of where your food is coming from. And trying to educate people as well where your food is coming from. I don't know if that's trendy, but I think it is very big at the minute.
Okay.
And to make sure there's using sustainable fish. I know there's a new app called Abalobi app, which is a fantastic way of using, and it's also giving back to the community. You know, it's also about using the right vegetables and vegetables that are grown in the correct manner. And I think that is where food is at the minute. And you know, nobody wants to be using king clip on the menu anymore. No, or even putting crayfish on. It's a stigma. And I think it's very good that restaurants are becoming very mindful of the fact.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I had a family member visiting from overseas at the beginning of the year who said he really wanted to eat crayfish. And I sort of said to him, you know, it's going to be difficult. You probably shouldn't. It's not on the green list, etc.
Yes.
And he was, please, can you just find out if somebody is serving it? And I called around any number of restaurants, and I was really delighted that the answer I got from them was, no, it's not on the menu.
Yeah.
We simply will not do it.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, I think maybe even a year ago, the answer would have been, sure, we can do it. It's going to cost you an arm and a leg.
Or we could
source
it. And I'm so glad. I'm also glad that that's happening, because people are being aware of where the ingredients are coming from and what impact those ingredients are having on the environment. And I think restaurants play a huge part in educating other people and the masses of what's happening with the food. And I think,
exciting times. Okay,
exactly.
The final question is for Logan.
Yes.
So next round of the San Pellegrino competition, you have to, do you present the same signature dish again? How does it work?
You're going to have to do your dish, your signature dish, and I think it's in mid-October. You do six of those, your signature dish that goes to the judges to try. And then you also have to make 40 small tasting portions for the media as well. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge.
How does one get a media invite?
How do you get invited?
we'll talk during the news at 2 o'clock. Okay. Well, very, very good luck to you. I don't know what you say to a chef. You say break a leg to an actor. Do you say break a whisk to a chef? But really, really hope it continues to go well for you in the competition. And I want to say thank you both to Logan Leiser, who, as I said, is through to the next round of the San Pellegrino Young Chef 2020 edition, and to her mentor, Executive Chef Michael Degg of Cavalli Restaurant. Several people asking me where to find Cavalli in Somerset West.
Yes, it's on the R44 between Somerset West and Stellenbosch. We sit directly in between Somerset and Stellenbosch.
Okay, beautiful location. Yeah. If you'd like to read up more and take a look at some of the beautiful photographs of the estate, their website is Cavalli Estate, spelled Cavalli, cavalliestate.com. Great to have you both with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.